Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 74. We are in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, home of that BC Bud? I don't know. I
was home of Mike Bond.
Home of all kinds of weed?
I was going to try to say something nice, but that was just the first thing that came to mind. John Morgan here. Cold coffee is with me. The young Mike Bond is here as well. We are tucked out in the outer recesses of Vancouver, the suburbs. We've done a little the Airbnb route this week since there were three of us, and since this is a quite the expensive town, there's no doubt about it. Real estate is a little expensive. That means hotel rates are expensive. So we rented a house, but it's worked out. We're, of course, here for UFC on Fox 21, Maya versus Condit. Big, big welterweight fight, Damian Maya, Carlos Condit. And the young Mike Bond, as you said, your hometown, although you've been a resident of Toronto for the last few years, this is where it all started for the youngster.
It is. This is where I started my first website that led to, you know, where I am currently today. So it's always nice to come back here. Get to see the family, get to see friends. It's a great time.
All right, let's just jump into it because I want to admit it. You've been kind of disappointed, right? Like, I feel like all week long you've kind of been throwing it out there that there's just not maybe the buzz that you wanted, the hype that you wanted for this event.
Well, not even that I wanted. Just even last time they were here, which was UFC 174, which is Demetrius Johnson versus Ali Bagatinov, you like knew there was a UFC in town. I come here, I don't know about you guys, but like looking around town, I haven't seen a billboard, I haven't seen something on plastered on the side of a bus, a cab, anything. Like, you wouldn't even know that the UFC is here. And I've been trying to like drop hints to people, you know, whether it's UFC PR staff, whatever, be like, what are ticket sales like? And no one wants to give you an answer, or they say they don't know. So I'm wondering what it's going to be like on Saturday night. That's just very, very interesting.
Doesn't excite you. I get what you're saying. I think from what we're gathering, it's probably going to be one of those nights where it's just the lower bowl only. I mean, it's a big building over there.
It is. It's one of the biggest NHL arenas.
So. It is. So a huge NHL arena. So it sounds like it's going to be lower bowl only. But I think that's, you know, fairly typical for fight nights, to be honest with you. And I think this is the first non-pay-per-view event that's been in Vancouver, right?
It is, yeah. So that's what's interesting about it, too. But I figured when I heard there was going to be a Fox card, I said, oh, I think it's going to do well because tickets are so much cheaper for these Fox shows than they are for your average pay-per-view. So that's what I thought. I'd be like, oh, maybe it'll be a packed house. Even hearing that the upper bowl is going to be tarped off is a little bit of a surprise to me. It just reminds me of, you know, you see the big events, the bigger shows they had here. Like the first one was Chuck Liddell and Rich Franklin, which was originally supposed to be Tito Ortiz. The second one was Junior Dos Santos versus Shane Carwin. It was supposed to be Dos Santos versus Brock Lesnar. Tickets sold very well. Mm-hmm. It was like pretty much a packed house. And it's kind of similar to the Montreal shows, like the last one. You would go there and you walk into the arena and you're like, there was GSP fights here. There wasn't a single seat empty. Like, it was absolutely insane. And then you go there and it's like the whole upper bowl is taped off. There's not many people there. It's just kind of mind-boggling in a way.
It's different. I mean, again, it is a fight night card. You know, although it's on Fox, it's still the UFC's not trying to sell pay-per-views, and I guess they're going to be comfortable with kind of a smaller gate, that sort of thing. But Cold Coffee, your experience in Vancouver itself, though, so far, I gotta say, Mike, I mean, you may take it for granted because you grew up here, but to me, this is honestly one of the most beautiful cities on earth.
Yeah, it really, really is. And you know, it's funny because every city we go to, it, you know, I hate to say it because I don't want to sound like I'm bragging or whatever, but it kind of blurs when you go from location to location. Until we got here, and especially like today when we got down by the water, it all came right back to me. Once you got along the water and you saw the mountains in the distance, and you see the seaplanes that come in, and you saw the sun setting, it was absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's a gorgeous area. I even like the look and the feel of the city. It's great, man. I do love coming here. And you're right, Mike, when you reference it, it's funny. Normally, every town you go to that has a UFC event, you see some sort of poster, some sort of something, and I haven't seen anything in this place. And I don't know if that's just, you know, somebody dropped the ball or if it's a matter of they didn't really care, you know.
Well, and they threw the show together on pretty short notice, I feel like.
Right.
It was, they didn't even know there was going to be a fifth Fox show this year. Like, I'm still curious why. Why are they doing five Fox cards this year as opposed to the normal ones? Are they trying to get through the deal faster? Did they lose out on a show that they have to make up on? I don't know.
I haven't heard a good reason, but you're right about that. Because we did hear at one point, hey, there's going to be a fifth Fox show this year. But I never really heard, like, why they decided to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I have no idea. But, yeah, beautiful town. I mean, I grew up here, like you said, and when you're here, you don't appreciate it as much. But I've lived in Toronto for a few years now, which is basically a concrete jungle, and the only water there is like a polluted lake. And you want to, when you come back here, I have so much more appreciation for it now. It's just like a
different
world. It's
gorgeous. I love being here. We got in on Tuesday night. Wednesday was an open day on the schedule. So there, you know, right away you see, yes, it's a little bit scaled back. It's fight night scheduling. Yep. We, of course, at MMA Junkie, you know, we like to, you know, we don't want to waste time. We want to get some content. So we booked some interviews. Hopefully you guys have checked those out. If you haven't, definitely do so. Opponents, Sam Alvey and Kevin Casey. We were able to talk to both those guys. The other ones that we talked to, Alessandro Ricci, who we found out he is not going to be Alex Ricci. He's going to be Alessandro Ricci. We talked to him. He's coming and stepping on short notice. But two people we talked to were Joe Lozon and Jim Miller, who I've got to say, I'm kind of surprised. I mean, I know you can only feature so many fights. But I'm kind of surprised that they haven't really been featured on anything officially, the UFC stuff. I mean, these are two of, you know, the most tenured fighters on the roster right now.
Yeah, and two of the most, you know, winningest lightweights ever. Jim Miller can tie Gleison Tibau's record for most wins in lightweight history with the victory. Joe Lozon has the most finishes in lightweight history, the most second most bonuses in UFC history. These are two well-known, exciting commodities. So, yes, they didn't put them on the open workout schedule or anything like that, but the fact that we got to, you know, sit down and have some exclusive time with them maybe almost makes it better in a way.
It was a lot of fun. We actually set up outside. If you haven't checked out those videos, please do it. Our man Colt Coffee putting in the extra work, putting a little extra production value in there, doing the two camera
setup.
Just a little something to give you. I made the decision that I wanted to do it outside, probably pissing off Colt Coffee and making it a little more difficult because it sounded great in my head. And then I kind of forgot about the fact that the sun would be moving the whole time we did it, so your light was changing the whole time. I know it was a little tough on you,
and
bro.
Maybe we should.
It happens.
Sorry, maybe we should have realized that more, especially because we dealt with the same thing in Rotterdam.
We did. We did deal with the same thing in Rotterdam. I had a really funny interview where we were trying to rush out an interview like as the sun was setting. And so when I went back to edit it, you could see like the sun like moving across the guy's face the whole time. It was pretty funny. But
it was a nice background. It was a nice change. I mean, I think, you know, anytime you can see the location that you're at, you know, is always good. But you know, we travel with what we can fit pretty much in our suitcases, so we don't have all the extra gears. We don't have a lighting truck, you know, a bunch of gear truck of all the stuff that we can combat the lights, the sun, and all the other kind of stuff. So we have to make do. But I thought they came out well. I thought the interviewers or the interviewees were happy to be outside. They all seemed in good sorts.
Yeah.
But no, I thought it came out good. I thought it came out well.
Something a little different.
It was special, and maybe they were a little pissed that we took the good angle on it. They didn't have all the scenery in the background, but still, it's a nice shot of Burrard Street out there. You know, you see the buses, everything passing by. Mm-hmm. It was a nice spot. I mean, it's cool, and you know, you always see those two-shot interviews on like TV and like all the high production stuff. So it was very. I've seen you guys do them at other events and stuff, and it's very nice to kind of be able to do something like that. It's cool. It's just a different take as opposed to, you know, I've always said I like doing the stuff. I feel like it enhances the interview when the reporter is at least seen on camera in some respect.
Right.
And to do kind of the back and forth like that, I thought was really cool.
It was fun. So if you didn't check those out, definitely MMA Junkie. We had Sam Alvey, Kevin Casey, Joe Lozon, Jim Miller, Alessandro Ricci, and we also talked to our good man Ricky Lundell as well. Ricky's a fun interview, man. He really is. He was good enough to sit down with us. Now Thursday, which is today, of course, we always sit down to record this on Thursday. We had the open workouts this morning. Interesting, I guess, to note there was a late change of venue to the open workouts. They were initially supposed to take place at
a place I can't remember the exact
the name of the theater. I can't remember the name of the
Rickshaw Theater.
Rickshaw Theater. You were supposed to. Yeah, Rickshaw does like sound like kind of a kind of a crappy name. But it was funny because we had people hit us up on Twitter that were like, "Why are they doing it at Rickshaw Theater?" Apparently, this area, it's a historic theater.
It's a very nice venue inside, but just the outside of it is a little sketchy. It's in East Vancouver, you know, the east side, which is, you know, known for a lot of places where drug addicts hang out. A little bit of a sketchy area, but, you know, I know what they do. They're very well organized with the stuff. Like, I didn't really think twice about it when I heard it. I know they run a very smooth operation.
Yeah.
I just figured they'd bring them up to the door in the bus, you know, take them inside, and that would be that. But, yeah, as, you know, you'll go on, they end up changing the venue.
Yeah, they just end up being a last-second change. They moved it back to the Host Hotel, which is the Hyatt Regency Vancouver, which worked out fine. But I will say this. You know, you talked about there not being a buzz and not seeing advertising, that sort of thing. I thought for sure when they did a late venue change on an open workout in the middle of a day on a Thursday that it was going to be bad. There was a nice turnout today.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It's, of course, it's not. We're coming off UFC 202. We were just in Vegas. You know, open workouts for that were absolutely insane. There's people, you know, screaming FU to the guys that are talking. We have Anthony Johnson shutting down hecklers and stuff. It wasn't that, you know, and we're Canadians, of course, so it was a much
very
nicer.
Polite. Very
I
polite.
I don't know about you. You've been to a lot more of these things. I've never seen so many young kids at one of these things before.
Yeah,
and it was awesome. I mean, all the fighters embraced them. We, you know, I posted a great photo on my Instagram of Carlos Condit signing an autograph for a very young girl. And it was very cool to just see the fighters interacting with such a young crowd.
It was awesome. Yeah, Carlos especially was down there, like got down on the floor and was like taking pictures and, you know, signing their little autograph books or whatever. Yeah, it definitely made me miss my little man for sure. And it's cool, you know, when you see little kids like that, they were just going, they were like so crazy, like, he's coming, you know what I mean?
Were,
like,
it's just crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It was very, very cool. So the six featured fighters there, Beck Rawlings and Paige Van Zandt. You have Charles Oliveira and Anthony Pettis. And then, of course, the main event, Carlos Condit, Damian Maia. Cole Coffey, you were shooting the workouts as you always do. Anything stand out to you today? I mean, we had, of course, Anthony Pettis, you know, getting down to 145 the first time. I thought, you know, looked like a different human being.
Yeah, and people kind of remarked as much on YouTube. I've seen some, you know, unfortunately, some kind of rude comments. You know, talking
I
know,
can
you imagine
no
that
way.
Holocaust victim, other sort of stuff.
Wow.
I mean, granted, I mean, it's an. I mean, it happens. I mean, we see these guys do some pretty big cuts, you know, and a lot of times you don't see the best things. But, you know, and he was chomping away at that gump like his life depended upon it. He kept switching pieces, too. I don't know if it's the sugar in it or something that, I don't know, maybe his stomach was upset.
I think
but he was
keep a little bit of hydration
and
in your
mouth. And some saliva in your mouth
and stuff. Saliva going, yeah.
Because the only thing, like, what I've seen guys chewing on, like, when I think of that, it infamously reminds me of the Vitor Belfort when he was chewing on the bag of ice.
Yeah.
I can't remember which fight that was before, but, like, that's one thing that always sticks in my mind when I see a guy, like, chewing like that.
He did. I mean, he was there, and again, we've got a full scrum interview up with him. It's on MMA Junkie. It's on YouTube as well. We're posting all this stuff to YouTube as well, so if you want to see it there. I mean, he did seem coherent. It wasn't like he was out of it.
No, he seemed fine. He seemed actually in decent enough of sorts. You know, even when he got his brother up there and stuff, it kind of seemed like he wanted to kind of rush through things and get a little bit and do some stuff. But, you know, I don't know if it was a matter of – I mean, I know it's tough when these guys are really trying to cut weight, and if they're really having a hard weight, the last thing you want to do is expend a lot of energy when you're already trying to just maintain your body when you're trying to cut the weight or whatever. But I thought he seemed like he did a good enough job. He hit mitts well.
But what was interesting to me – he wasn't throwing any flashy kicks.
No,
he wasn't,
nothing
he
at
wasn't
all.
Doing anything that's, you know, impressed the cameras at an open workout, which you'd typically see with Anthony Pettis.
Right. Yeah.
That was kind of curious to me. Maybe he just didn't have the energy to it. And I had heard that he got into town and he was 160. So that was – they got in on Tuesday, I believe. So I don't know. Like,
he said
that
today he had
seem,
about 6 pounds left.
Yeah, that doesn't seem horrible.
No.
Right after he said, I'm not going to talk about my weight. My
but
coach
I got
told me
pounds.
Not, but I have 6 pounds left.
And he did say, too, you know, I was worried, can I make 146? So he definitely is he wants to make 146,
he's thinking,
not 145.
Yeah, he's not doing a Conor McGregor where he's going to go on and say championship weight
type
145. Thing.
145. But, you know, so, you know, if he came in at 160 and if he was true to his word that he was 6 pounds over, then he was probably 152 today when we saw him. You know, so that means he'd lost 8 pounds in 48 hours or so.
Yeah, and it's just curious to me because – you know, we probably talked to him, maybe, I think it was like 2 p.m. Pacific time, local time. So he's got to be up. He's got to be, you know, scales open 9 a.m. local time. It's not like he has the, you know,
right.
the day on Friday. So it's a lesson time. That's not a massive time frame for that 6 pounds. So, and I wonder, and everything I've heard talking to, you know, trainers, dietitians, nutritionists, whatever, since these early weigh-ins have happened, they say that it seems like the night before, because the weigh-ins are so much earlier, a lot of these guys have tons of trouble sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it's a rough night for them before. And, of course, they have longer during the day. They can sleep all the rest of the day or the next night or whatever, sleeping, you know, later, but not that late because the first fight starts at 1 p.m. local time. So it's interesting. I'm just very curious to see him. I think it's going to be one of those situations at early weigh-ins. Some of these people may be listening to this after the fact, after weigh-in results come in, but I think we're going to be – it's going to be one of those things where he's going to be in that last half hour or 15 minutes of getting on the scale.
I think that's definitely the picture and the video that's going to be the most looked at tomorrow. I think people are definitely wanting to see it. I'm interested. I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
And it's you know, you mentioned I guess some, I wouldn't say the drawbacks or some of the challenges of the early weigh-ins. I mean, I think for the most part, everybody agrees this thing is a hit. This thing is a home run. The early weigh-ins are the way to go. Basically, the way it's working right now is the UFC has to go commission by commission. So, you know, I've asked the UFC operations, hey, can we just count on this, you know, for every week? And they say, no, you're going to have to keep checking with me. You know, we're working on it. But I think, you know, we're getting to a place very quickly where it's going to be every week.
It's going to be interesting to see, you know, as you say that, I think it'll probably be that. I think if you're talking to a commission, they're anti this. I'm curious to see who's going to be the commission, like what's going to be the event that's going to be like, no. And I think a lot coming up, I think there's quite a few events coming up where the UFC is going to be self-regulating. So of course that's going to be, you know, what's going to happen there. But I'm curious to see like who's going to be the commissions that's going to say, no,
that bucks the trend. Everybody else is saying
normal time, and who knows who it'll be. Like that's, I'm curious to see. Hopefully, it's not a project that doesn't happen, because I feel like, and it, we're obviously a very, very small sample size still. It's only been like less than 10 cards, but look at this recent stretch of events. I feel like the fights have
been phenomenal, pretty damn good.
Does that have anything to do with it? You could never say for sure, because there's like a billion factors that go into these fights, but it feels like generally since, when was the first event that this happened? Was it
199, right?
199.
UFC 199.
Since then. UFC 199 was probably perhaps the best card of the year. UFC 202 gave it a run for its money. It's probably 1-2 so far, but yeah, since then, we have not had a bad event from what I can recall.
Open workouts today. Talk about what you guys thought, and I'll ask you, Cole Coffee, first. Beck Rawlings and Paige VanZant, a fight that I'm looking forward to for a number of reasons, but I thought Paige looked in incredible shape today. I thought she looked phenomenal.
Yeah, she did. She really, really did. And it, you know, it's funny because we've made remarks, some right, some wrong, about the time off that she's had.
Mike Bond, shut down.
That was nice. But no, she looked like it was like she hadn't missed a beat. I mean, there was just something different and more practiced and more fluid when you watched her hit mitts, where it looked like a lot of times watching Beck, and I love Beck, and I think Beck's got some good power if she hits right, but there was just times it seemed like they were still kind of learning routines, you know, like trying to call out like, you know, hey, we haven't been working on this that much, you know, sort of deal, which, you know, granted, when it gets to a fight, you know, you're going to go down to what you really know, and all that kind of, some of that stuff goes out the door. But if you have a good firm grasp, I think it's there for you to draw upon. And I think that's the difference when you have someone like Paige that just looks like that stuff is so well drilled into her head, that when it comes and becomes a brawl, she's able to kind of reach back into that library of fight moves and whatnot, and has a little more variety than what you might see from Beck. But I can't take anything away from Beck. I mean, it's a fight. Everybody has a chance. But just watching him today,
Paige looked smoother.
One thing that just stood out to me was Beck just looked generally
bigger. Well, that's what I was going to say. The thing is, like, she does, I was surprised, because I think you brought it up, and Paige said, look, if I could go to 125, I would. And in my head, I feel like Paige is an atom weight. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I feel like she could go to 105. Whereas Beck, I'm like, I feel she struggles to get to 150.
She does. Like, she was one of the people who was very, very vocal. If you, like, follow her on social media or whatever, she wants 125, like, really bad.
Right. So I'm intrigued by this fight. I mean, of course, there's the whole, like, good girl versus bad girl, like, you know, as far as, like, the storyline, quote-unquote, or whatever. But as far as just the fight itself, like, you know, X's and O's, technical analysis, I'm interested in this, because I do feel like Paige has, you know, she's quicker, she's smoother, she's definitely poised. It's incredible at how young she is, how poised she is.
Just turned 22.
But I do feel like Beck is significantly bigger and stronger.
It was. That's what it looked like to me. She didn't look as smooth on the pads and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know. She can make it like a dirty fight, kind of grind Paige out. That's what kind of Paige thrives in, though, too.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
A little bit
that's what makes a compelling fight. And who knows? I feel Paige made a good point saying, you know, the time off is good for me. You take damage. I got to heal from some injuries. The UFC was riding her pretty hard. Like, true. After she came and hit that, I think they put her in three fights, like, pretty damn quickly. It wasn't Sage Northcutt status, right. Like, where they'd put him three fights in, like, 4 months or something. Right. But they were riding that Paige VanZant wave pretty hard. And then, of course, she got absolutely dominated.
And it wasn't like she wasn't doing anything athletic. I mean, you see Dancing with the Stars, like, you know, you see, like, ex-athletes go in there and they end up losing 30 pounds or whatever. Because it is it is an athletic endeavor that you're doing.
She looked amazing on that show, by the way.
Yeah, and she looked phenomenal today. I mean, she looked like she was in incredible shape. Matt Erickson with the Dancing with the Stars beat.
But look at what happened when I felt almost the same way when she went with Felice Herrick. I thought Felice looked so much bigger, and I thought Felice was going to manhandle her. And it was completely the other way around.
That's what I wanted because, so we're saying.
She's super strong. She's a small package, but Paige is very, very strong. You don't see it. I think she's just so muscular and so fit, but she's in such a small package. She's like a little gymnast that just springs and has so much power that you don't see it on the surface.
That's where I wonder, like, in this fight, like, we're saying that Beck looks like the physically stronger person, but where is she going to get to use that? Because, like, if you say, like, okay, well, she's going to have more power on the feet. Okay, but we just said, you know, how much slicker, you know, Paige looks with her movement, with her
really
strikes.
Quick.
Okay, so how about in the clinch? Paige is great at transitions. Yeah. Like, when she's in those scrambles, she's super smooth. So
she does.
I definitely feel like Beck is so strong. Yeah, it's Team Alpha Male. I feel like Beck is so strong and powerful, but, like, I don't necessarily know where she's going to get to use that power because I feel like that speed and movement and transitions that Paige has is going
to
make
it tough. She's
going
to have to hurt her. She's going to have to hit her with something, catch her, and crack her hard, and then get in there and grab her while there's some cobwebs up in the head or something. Because you're right. If she doesn't hurt Paige and they get in that clinch, I think Paige can get away from it.
Strawweight fights, hurting each other with like one shot blows.
Yeah,
I wonder. I mean, no disrespect to Beck, of course. You know, she's a fighter who's been in the game longer than Paige, but, like, you look at the two fighters she's beaten in the UFC, Lisa Ellis lost 5 of 6. Siohee Ham, probably, like, if there was a 95-pound division, she'd probably belong in that. Like, you know, very, very undersized for the UFC. She's a badass.
Badass fighter.
Hamdrillay Silva, like, you get my props if that's your nickname. But, yeah, it's very hard to judge exactly where these people are. And I mean, you could say some of the same stuff about Paige. If you believe Felice Herrig, all the stuff she said post fight, like, if you follow her, she's begging for a rematch with Paige because she just feels like it was like a complete wrong indictment on her skills in that fight that she lost to Paige. And then, you know, Kylan Curran, we just saw her lose to Felice. And
Kylan Curran's very early in her career.
She's very early in her career, but you talk to people around her. I mean, Kylan Curran's dating a guy who's a professional surfer, I believe, from what I've heard, all indications. Like, she just travels with him and, like, trains very infrequently when she can. Like, she doesn't seem like a person who – she's had, like, a win or two in the UFC, but she just doesn't seem like her head is completely in being, like, the best fighter or any of that stuff. So it's – both these fighters, it's kind of hard
question
to judge.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. All right, let's talk about some news that came out this week, and we'll get to the main event in just a second. But Rory McDonald has been a lot of the conversation this week. Rory McDonald, the deal is still not
signed.
Pen's not on paper yet, but the UFC's already made it clear. We
might know the process better than me. So from what I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rory went out. He can get his offer. Mm-hmm. Bellator made him an offer. The UFC declined to counter, and he can't sign the contract until they decline. And then they go back, then he can sign.
Correct,
and
because that's what makes they do have an exclusive matching period, the UFC does. That's how the contracts work. The UFC, though, I will say this, and I know people love to hate on the UFC, and I get it. They're actually pretty damn good about the fact that, like, listen, if you want to go get offers, go get offers. Because at first they have an exclusive negotiating period,
which is like 90 days or something.
Generally, they'll waive that. Like, if they don't want to sign you, they'll just like, dude, go do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Then they have a matching period. They're very good, from everything I've been told, they're very good about, like, just come to us with the offer, let us see the offer, and they let you know right away. You know, like, no, we're not. And from what I understand, from what I was actually told, the UFC actually declined to match this offer weeks ago. So, like, they've known for weeks that they're out of the Rory McDonald business. And from that point on, it's just been Rory probably fielding offers. You know, hey, we've got this offer from Bellator. Let's go check World Series. Let's go check one.
So can you do that, though, if you've already accepted an offer and they declined a match? Can you go out and look for
other
things?
Don't have to accept the offer. You just have to offer tendered. Okay. Yeah, and you have to bring the offer to them. And then,
which is interesting to them because, obviously, they just see all the Bellator contracts and everything.
They get
right?
to see every single thing, which is interesting because Every high-profile free agent that's been able to leave, if you ask the right people, you can find out all the details in the contract. So it's pretty interesting. Okay, but I'll say this, and I have been told this by very high-ranking UFC officials, and I've been told it multiple times. If they want to keep a free agent, they are going to keep a free agent.
Gross.
I don't think that Bellator could bring so much money to the table that the UFC just goes, there's no way. Like, we really want this guy. We really, really want this guy. But we just can't match that financial offer.
Yeah.
At some point, the UFC made the decision. I don't know when it was, but at some point they made the decision. They were okay. Just like Phil Davis. When Phil Davis left, the UFC made a conscious decision. We're okay letting Phil Davis walk out the door. That's same thing here. They're okay with Roy McDonald walking
Henderson.
The door. Benson Henderson as well. Roy McDonald is 27 years old.
He's
27.
Old 27. He's an 11-year veteran.
And that's what I want to ask. I mean, this is one of your countrymen. This is a guy that I think, you know the Canadian office here. You know, not necessarily wanted to build around him, but definitely wanted to feature him. You know, look at Cowboy. Cowboy had one fight left on his deal. Everybody was saying he's going to get a huge offer, and they signed an 8-fight deal.
There's reports even out that Bellator made him an offer, which was very quickly denied by Bellator because clearly it was
can't BS offer somebody that's still under contract. That would be tortious interference.
Yeah, so, I mean, I know you're getting out with the Roy thing.
Well, what do you think? Do you think? I mean, is he a shot fighter? Is he done?
Well, okay, I'll say this first, which makes me curious since we're talking about free agents. We talk about, you know, everyone's like, they go over to Bellator, they get all these things, the Reebok deal, they'll get more sponsorships. If you actually listen to an interview Benson Henderson did a week or two ago, it was on Ariel Helwani's show, and he was talking, like, he asked him, what did you get for sponsors for the last fight? Benson Henderson said he had one sponsor that didn't pay him as much as he would have got if he had been on his X, I don't know exactly the number, whatever tier of the Reebok deal he would have been on, which to me is fascinating. And he was going on to this long diatribe about how, you know, you build them back up and it's going to take a while to, like, reestablish the sponsor market and all that stuff. So that's something that maybe these guys are overestimating even going into free agency. But in terms of Rory, I mean, I've been to many of his UFC fights. You go to these places they had been to. They went to Halifax, which was a completely sold-out show. They headlined where he headlined versus Tarek Saffiedine. They went to Ottawa, headlined him there versus Stephen Thompson, sold-out show. And you could maybe make the argument it was the first time in these
markets,
territories they would have done well, whatever. But, like, you look at that. That Rory McDonald show in Halifax did 5,000 more people than that recent, the pay-per-view before it with Demetrius Johnson in Montreal.
Right.
So, like, he is a very big seller in Canada. People know who he is. He's not, you know, the heir to GSP like we all, maybe some people were implying at the beginning. He's not, you know, all these kind of things that may, you know, the next big guy, but he's still the biggest Canadian draw, the highest ranked guy, you know, absent George St. Pierre, and just a huge name in this country, and people appreciate him and know who he is, and they'll go to his fights. So I think losing him for the Canadian market, it's definitely a shot, you know, downwards for them. I don't know, like, if they're coming back and they're just going to, unless they just want to do pay-per-views like they're going to do, you know, in December in Toronto, which is going to be a big show. They'll obviously be like a title fight, maybe the return of George St. Pierre. There's going to be big fights, but, like, if they want to try to break into these smaller markets, I don't know where else they're going to go. Like, they could do Edmonton, which is a place they haven't been, which just built a new venue. They could go back to Calgary. Like, I feel like Rory McDonald's a guy you really, really want for those cards, unless you're just going to make it a huge show where you absolutely don't need him. But you look behind that, like, who are the best Canadian fighters in the UFC? Valerie Letourneau is the highest ranked. She's lost two in a row. She is 35 years old. She, you know, like, what's left in her tank? You're not going to headline an event with her. So it's very curious. I felt just Rory was a name. And is he shot? So hard to say.
I mean, I hate to say that. I mean, look,
I don't know, because look who he lost to. He lost to Robbie Lawler and he lost to Stephen Thompson, who are, like, you could make the argument right now at welterweight, the top three.
Absolutely.
Minus taking GSP out of the picture is Tyron Woodley, Robbie Lawler, and Stephen Thompson.
Well, for the UFC to let him walk out the door, that means that they have made the evaluation. They have gotten together. You know, Dana White and Joe Silva have discussed it, and they think he's on the way down, not on the way up.
Yeah, no, and
right? I mean, Yeah. You know, Dana said it. You know, he told me, he gave me that quote. And you know, I don't think he meant it as an insult to Benson Henderson. A lot of people took it. But he made that famous quote where he said, we're looking for guys on the way from 15 to 1, not 1 to 15.
Well, the thing I will give the UFC credit for is you look historically, like, in terms of big names that they've let walk or even just straight up cut, like a John Fitch, they've had a very historically good record of, like, seeing when, you know, the top has come and the, you know, the downward climb is going. John Fitch got choked out by Josh Berkman in his next fight. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously Benson Henderson got ripped up pretty bad by Andrei Koreshkov. There's a few more examples that, you know, you could go into. And they feel like Joe Silva and Sean Shelby know the fight game better than probably all three of us combined. They probably watched.
I don't know.
Maybe. Okay.
No, they do.
Well, whatever.
They do.
I'm joking. Maybe not. They don't know. They've watched more fights, and they have a better judgment of fighters, I would say. So, and historically, they've had a very good call on this. So, I don't know. I guess we'll just have to see Rory's next fight. This guy can barely get through a fight without getting his nose smashed. Like, is there too many injuries there? I don't know. And maybe from Rory's perspective, he's fought for the title. It did go his way. He said from day one, even before his fight was, like, before going into the fight where his contract was going up, he said, I'm going to go, you know, what's best for me. He just had a daughter that was born a couple months ago, his first child. He's thinking about number one right now and where it can bring the most money.
As he should.
And if Bellator is going to pay him something that makes him feel comfortable, I'm all on that. It's a loss for the UFC in Canada. But, hey, I've had some conversations with people over at Bellator. It sounds like we'll probably get a Bellator show in Canada at some point. Maybe they kind of pick up off the back of that. They go to one of these markets and Roy headlines, and they sell out a show. It's something that for them, they're maybe picking up that the UFC doesn't care too much about losing. But for Bellator, it's significant, and maybe for Rory's, you know, financial well-being, all that kind of stuff, and maybe just physical well-being. Yes, Bellator.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I for his physical well-being, I hope what they don't do is put him against Koreshkov in his first fight, because Koreshkov is a beast.
I would hope they've learned their mistake
by now. I would love to see Rory come in and I don't want to say a tune-up fight or whatever. Like,
I mean, I don't want to see him fight no name, but like, you put him against Paul Daly, like someone with a bit of a name that you could.
You could punch him right in his nose.
Yeah, but we've seen that. You know, he could, but I feel like Rory is good enough on the feet to maybe get away from that. And there's guys in the Bellator that he could most certainly beat.
I was thinking more like Josh Koscheck.
Well, why would you do that to poor Josh Koscheck? That's just mean. Wow. Well, Josh Koscheck can't even make it to a fight right now, which is a bigger issue. But there's guys out there. I mean, their welterweight division has a few names. Like, I don't know if you want to put him against like a Brennan Ward, maybe. Like, there's some dudes out there I guess you could put him in against, but it just depends, because at the same time, yes, you want to throw him a bone and like start his career off in the same way. But at the same time, they're paying him a ton of money, I'm assuming. So it's like you want to get your money.
Put him up against Baby Slice when he's back. No, I'm just kidding.
That's awful. You're terrible.
I'm just kidding. All right. Main event this week, Carlos Condit, Demian Maia. We'll talk about this fight a little bit more. But since my beverage is getting a little empty over here and I need to re-up on that, what I figured we would do right now is we had a chance to talk to Mr. Carlos Condit, the natural born killer. Let's say not a lot of media here. Not a lot of media as far as, traveling media, the circus that we all follow that goes from town to town.
For traveling media, if we're not including me, because this is kind of my hometown.
Exactly, yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of it. What ended up happening at the scrums today was basically just me and you kind of talked to people, and then other people kind of joined in. So I thought I would play this Carlos Condit audio and let you kind of hear from the natural born killer. He was in great spirits. He also busted your balls a little bit, which was pretty funny. We did put that. If you didn't check it out, we put that on Instagram and Twitter. It was pretty funny. If you haven't seen the video, it's worth checking out, because basically what happens is, and I'll let you hear. I want you to hear the whole audio. But at one point, the young Mike Bond tries to respectfully ask about, you know, shoring up the takedown defense. Obviously, Carlos Condit does not want to be on the ground with Demian Maia. You asked it in a very respectful way. You handled it the right way. But about halfway through your question, Carlos knew what you were going to ask and started to get this little tiny smirk and smile, because he knew what he wanted to say back to you, and he busted your balls right away, which if you haven't seen it already, you'll hear it here, and you definitely need to see the video at some point as well, because it's pretty damn funny. So, all right, we're going to re-up on these frosty beverages. We're going to wake up cold coffee over there. I apologize. We started talking about Canadian MMA, and we let cold coffee over there enjoy his smoked cheddar cheese and Kalamata olives. So while we refill all that, check out Carlos Condit.
Carlos, just give us an idea. You know, it was brought up there that you had teased kind of retirement a little bit. And what was the thought process? Like, how did you go through it to say, no, I've got more in me?
You know, I love the sport. It's going to be hard to pull me away. I mean, you know, logically, I got to figure out something else to do, like, for a career, because I can't do this forever. But, you know, I still got a little bit of time. I still got some fight in me, I think, so, yeah.
I mean, it's definitely smart to start thinking about the future, but when you say a couple fights left, or one more run, I mean, are we talking imminent, a year, 18 months? I mean,
I don't know. I don't know. You know, I'm focused on the next 3 days, bud. And, you know, that I think that will have a lot of bearing on what I do after that.
You talk about getting ready for Demi Maia, presents such a unique set of skills, different than anybody else in the division. Has it been fun preparing for him? Has it been a challenge? What's it been like?
It has been a fun challenge, man. He's an amazing grappler. He's very, very good at what he does. He's well-rounded, even though he, you know, mainly sticks to his jiu-jitsu. But yeah, it's been fun preparing to like try to solve a puzzle like Damian Maya.
What makes him such a challenging grappler? Is it his takedown game? Because there's a lot of really good grapplers, but sometimes they struggle to even get the fight to the ground. He seems to be that very effective.
Well, yeah, he's got both. Once he hits the ground, he's a straight killer, and he's really improved his grappling over, you know, over the recent years. Probably, you know, since that Anderson Silva fight where he couldn't get to the ground. He's been, you know, really, really good at, you know, taking it to where he wants it.
I know Ricky wasn't able to be in Albuquerque a lot, but what's it like having him to work with that has that style that blends all the different elements of wrestling and jiu-jitsu together, kind of for MMA more than anything?
Yeah, it's awesome. His take on it is really cool because he was a jiu-jitsu guy before he learned how to wrestle, and he's a very high level wrestler, so it's like there's no like, okay, we're grappling or we're wrestling or we're doing jiu-jitsu. It's all blended, it's grappling, it's all, you know, branches of the same tree that are all integrated.
How much is there a little bit of this that's reminding people, a chance to remind people that you've got some submission wins in your back pocket and you got a ground game that people shouldn't be sleeping on either?
I've been doing jiu-jitsu for a long time. I love jiu-jitsu. It's one of my favorite aspects of the sport. And, you know, obviously I'm not gonna get in there and try to go eyeball to eyeball with Damian Maya in a jiu-jitsu exchange. But, you know, I think I'm going to do – I have the skills to create opportunities to do what I want to do and finish the fight.
Giving up takedowns maybe being something that's – watching it or happened a little more in your fights than maybe you wanted. What have you done to kind of change that aspect of the game? Because I know obviously Robbie Lawler and I didn't have to deal with that, but this fight I'm assuming it's going to be a key.
Is that a polite way of saying my takedown defense sucks? I've worked on it quite a bit, and worked on takedown defense, worked on get-ups, worked on, you know, a lot of footwork. You know, I think you're going to see different things in this fight. I've made some adjustments, and I think early on in the fight, it's going to frazzle my opponent, and I'm going to be able to kind of take control.
And when it changed to a 5-round fight, do you feel like that's, you know, to your advantage? A lot of people call you one of the best 5-round fighters ever in MMA.
Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like my conditioning is a weapon, and the later the fight goes, you know, as these guys start to get fatigued, that's really when I kick into my second gear, and I have that as you know, as something in my arsenal that I can bring to bear. So I'm trying to finish him early. I'm trying to get out of there, go home, eat some food. But if it goes later in the fight, I got that base covered too.
Talked to Brandon Gibson. He said you guys, as camp was starting, had a conversation talking about race cars fine tuning for each track and it not being about big gains, it being about dialing thing in. Does this feel like the most dialed in you've been for a specific opponent in a while?
I think it does, and probably because he is so dialed into what he does, we had to, you know, really have a skills-heavy training camp. You know, I'm strong, I'm fast, I'm, you know, I have all these macro elements to my game. It was, like you said, really fine-tuning, The technique, the coding and the circuitry of my brain and putting together a really good game plan.
Welcome back to the NBA Roll Show. That was Carlos Conde in good spirits busting the young Mike Bonds balls, which is always funny. All right, listen. If you like what you're hearing, even from Cole Coffey, who doesn't have a headset on right now, because he's just chilling over there. Go ahead. Put your headset on, Doc.
No, man. I'm taking this one off. I'm taking this week off.
All right, well, listen. Now that you have your headset on, what I was going to say is, if you like what you're hearing, what you should do, you should log into iTunes. You should rate us. You should review us. You should subscribe to us. You should do all that stuff. You could be like my man Tanseltown, who logged in and gave us just 4 stars. Not 5. Just 4. And you know why, Cole Coffey? He's not a fan of yours.
Oh.
So just like you supported the guy that didn't like me, I got this guy's back. No, he says, let me tell you what he says. He says, I love John Morgan, the best MMA journalist. Sorry, Ariel. And second best MMA talk show host next to Luke Thomas. I could listen to him all day. Thanks, Tanseltown. That's kind of you. On the other hand, I wish they'd dump Cold Coffee. Guy can't say 5 words without dropping a random F-bomb or S-bomb for no apparent reason other than to purely swear. I see too often in MMA talk shows.
This sounds like
Ricky Bones, Jordan Breen, etc., i.e. guys who excessively swear just for the sake of swearing. I'm not against cursing. I do it too. But usually because I'm angry or trying to emphasize something. Swearing just for the sake of swearing is pure douchebag. Either you're trying too hard to look tough, trying too hard to look cool, or trying too hard to emulate Dana White. And that's Cold Coffee. Or as he probably calls himself, Cold Fucking Coffee.
Cold fucking I will
also,
now.
Also, the more we get of Simon Head as a guest, the better. Okay, wait. This is Simon Head. This is actually Simon Head. The more we get of Simon Head as a guest, the better. That guy is phenomenal. Oh, this is definitely Simon Head. Maybe replace Cold Coffee with him. At least he can get his point across without dropping a dozen F-bombs.
Wow. I like it. I don't know if I agree. What's his name?
It is Tanseltown.
No. He sounds like this guy, Paulie Vegas, who wrote on the webpage pretty much saying as much, but he went by a different name. I guarantee it's the same because it's almost the exact same thing.
He's like literally
I see you, Paulie Vegas. I see you, Paulie Vegas. Tinseltown, thank you very much for your words. I appreciate that, and I'll plan to ignore that continuously. But he sounds just like this Paulie Vegas dude that tried commenting on the webpage.
Hey, still give you 4 stars. That could be worse.
Yeah, that's true.
I know.
Thank you very much.
I wanted that extra star. I wanted that extra star.
Well, it's funny.
Tanseltown, if I fire Cold Coffee, will you give me 5 stars? We won't have a producer then, so we'll no longer be a podcast.
So you won't have anything to rate.
All right. Hey, listen, guys. I want to talk to you about one other little piece of news. Dana White hinting this week that John Jones versus Anthony Johnson could be next. Listen, there's no question. Dana, if he's saying that, he's starting to sell something, right? Like, he's a promoter. That's what he does. He's got inside information. He's got a feeling that John Jones – now, again, it's got to be a feeling that John Jones is gonna get off of this issue. Michael Bisping, of course, kind of put it on blast, as we have been saying for a couple weeks here on the MMA Roadshow. He called it Cialis. It's not actually Cialis, but that was the same thing we were hearing as well. I don't know about this. Like, Daniel Cormier is saying straight up, I don't want to fight John Jones, and I can't blame
Anthony
him for
Johnson's
it.
Saying it too.
Anthony Johnson saying, I want to fight Daniel Cormier. I don't want to fight John Jones. Nobody wants to fight John Jones. And I get it from Daniel Cormier's perspective, especially. He cannot risk another failed fight, you know, not happening, not coming together. But
yeah. He lost millions of dollars last time around, even though he got a fight.
I'm just
the greatest of all time.
Can I just not say it? I just thought it was bizarre. Like, to me, after Anthony Johnson knocked out Glover Teixeira in 13 seconds, to me, I'm like, dude, I don't care if John Jones gets – right now, like, gets off suspension. I want to see Anthony Johnson versus Daniel Cormier. And from what I'm hearing, John Jones took something that was not a performance-enhancing substance. And I don't know exactly how USADA works. We're all learning about it. He's also got to deal with the Nevada State Athletic Commission.
That's the biggest concern to me.
I think I still think he's going to do some time. I feel like he's still going to do some time.
I think he is, even if – whatever. We haven't even – okay, so the minimum we've seen – the only thing that makes me, when Dana came out and said this, I was like, he's angling for a fight in New York.
He's starting to sell a fight already, of course.
Starting to sell a fight, but the only reason that would make sense to me –
which is his job, so I don't fault him for it.
Yeah, no, but the only thing that makes sense to me for, like, even talking about a John Jones versus anyone fight is if you're looking for a fight to add to New York. Because you look – you know, you don't have – Ronda Rousey officially ruled out of that card. Conor McGregor, we don't know. But, like, John Jones is not going to come back by New York. That's so soon. Even if he got the least suspension, Yoel Romero tainted 6 months.
Or 9 months.
But even say, like, Yoel Romero got reduced to 6 months. Someone else that I'm forgetting off the top of my head, 6 months. Oh, Tim Means. Yeah, so, like, even if that happened, that puts him to December.
Yeah.
So what's the angle here? I don't get it. And what, like, are you just going to put Daniel Cormier on ice for, like, 9 months? There's no one else for him to fight unless, you know, Ilir Latifi beats Ryan Bader next week.
Talk
just
bad
kidding.
About the sledgehammer.
I'm not even talking bad, but I'm just saying, like, there's no one really there. There's no one there in that division. So, like, what are you getting here? We're going to push Daniel Cormier inside, and what, Rumble Johnson's going to fight for the interim title? It just makes no sense. So that doesn't make any sense to me, even if, like, he got the minimum suspension. You saw it as going to give him 3 months, not going to give him 4 months. The minimum would be 6 months. And then he has to
deal with
the Nevada commission, who does not have much of a high feeling for John Jones. Of course, there was the whole cocaine situation that he was publicly mentioning he could force legal action to, which he still can. Mm-hmm. He has a 2-year window on that, so he has up until January of next year to do legal action. He opted not to after the whole hit-and-run thing happened.
Probably a good
idea. Of course. He doesn't need to add more shit to his plate on top of everything that's happened. But still, like, even the fact that he was talking publicly about that he knows that they handle it the wrong way. I'm sure they don't have the highest feelings. I'd think at the very least he would get a year from them. Maybe 9 months. I would be shocked if it was less than a year.
I'd say 9 months. Sure. But I would say a year.
That would put him well over. So,
but,
like,
but I mean, I remember the Nick Diaz situation. You know, we were talking. I was thinking like 2 years, and then I came with like 5.
Yeah, so you don't know what these people are going to do, and it's just very, very confusing. So I don't know what the angle here is. So even if you were going to book that fight, Rumble versus John Jones, which is sick, which we've all wanted to see since UFC 187 when they were originally supposed to fight, and of course John fell out and Daniel Cormier stepped in and won the title, all that kind of stuff. What's the point of that, and what are you going to do with Daniel Cormier, who's been nothing but a model champion, who's going out and saying, I want to fight possibly the scariest dude in MMA right now, Anthony Johnson. I'll gladly rematch him.
All right.
Like, what's the angle here? I don't get what Dana White's doing by throwing this fight out there when we still don't know anything. Like, I get the...
I wanted to talk about this because I was trying to make sure that I wasn't the only one that thought it was crazy. But now that you mention it, and maybe it's partially to do with the Canadian frosty beverages that we're having here. Cold coffee.
That's Irish whiskey you're having there.
It's Canadian
just to
Irish.
It's mixed with
Irish
ginger
whiskey.
Ale.
You're having nothing Canadian right now. Except the ice cubes.
What I was going to say is that you, my man, Cold Coffee, are a fan of the conspiracy theory.
What? Of what fixes?
Is there any? Oh, not a fix. Is there any chance? Is there any chance? And I'm just throwing this out there. Is there any chance that, as you just said, young Mike Bond, Anthony Johnson might be the scariest dude in the game right now? That Dana's like, I'm so goddamn. I'm sorry, Tinseltown. I didn't mean to drop out of that. I am so sick of dealing with this dude. I want him to have to go in there and face the murderer that is Anthony Johnson.
Sure. Why not? I don't think he would do it out of spite or anything like that. I think it'd just because it'd be a good fight.
Because I still think John Jones is like a 3-1 favorite in that fight.
Really?
A minimum.
I mean, dude, I'd pick him. I'm not. Listen, man, I'm picking John Jones against anybody.
Exactly.
Yeah,
period.
Pretty much.
Period.
I mean, even though we know how powerful Rumble is and
what
he does to people when he actually makes connections or something like that, I think John's just his reach and his distance. I don't think he'd ever get in there close enough to really – he'll hit him once, but John could take a punch. I mean, can he take 4 or 5 or 6 of those? Maybe not as much, but – yeah, I could see him fight him, but I mean, I think right now, I think they would still probably put him in DC as the next one.
And I will give a MMA Roadshow exclusive here. I've been sitting on this quote for about a year.
Since
I went to see John Jones.
Sitting on it for a year.
Or since, not a year, since early February when I went SOM, so whatever, half a year or something, waiting for the fact, and I thought I would be able to use it when it was...
10 years we've been sitting on this quote, and young Mike Bond is going to break it out now.
When it was very briefly rumored that when John Jones's management mistakenly put out that he was going to fight Anthony Johnson at
I forgot about that. I forgot about
that. And he ended up fighting Owen St. Preux, but here's a John Jones quote on Anthony Johnson. He has a huge gaping hole in his game, several, but what makes him good is the fact that he has unbelievable form in his striking. He's got great power, but he's a knight with a huge sword and no shield. That's a great way to put it.
That is a great way to put it.
So he, you know, he knows Anthony Johnson, yes, and we all know this. We're not oblivious. We've seen it multiple times, even when he was cutting ridiculous weight to fight someone like Josh Koscheck at 170. You see, if you can get through that initial flurry, get him to the ground, wear him out, he fades. You can choke him out. You can TKO him. It's happened, you know, a few times. All of his losses are in the UFC. Mm-hmm. We've seen them all. So that's not like a huge thing. But John Jones is a very smart fighter.
He
knows that if they were to fight, I'm sure, you know, he's not intelligent. He has very smart people around him. He would get past that rumble flurry, and then he would probably, you know, put his takedown game together, submit him, TKO him, whatever. I'd favor John Jones in that fight. Of course. Johnson, like, you have to favor him, but Anthony Johnson can KO anyone.
That dude is the definition of a puncher's
chance.
But still,
we're talking about a fight, and I feel like this is almost disrespectful to Anthony Johnson because he's done so much. Like, this dude, why is he fighting the interim champion? He should be fighting the full champion. Why? Like, we don't know anything about John Jones, which makes it so perplexing that Dana White is coming out and saying this. Like, put the fight together between Anthony and Daniel. Let them fight. If Anthony wins, okay, then John Jones can fight him. But, like, it just – unless we're so unprivy to something that's going on and John Jones is just going to be, like, completely cleared and they're going to book him for the New York card, and that makes sense to me. Like, yeah. Daniel says he doesn't want to fight him. Okay, let's put him in the co-main event.
Dana is calculated. He's smart. He knows what he's doing. He's not just throwing this out there just to throw it out there. You know what I mean? He's got a game plan in mind.
No, of course. And it relates, I don't know if we're going to talk about it later. I mean, he just recently came out and, like, challenged George St. Pierre once again, who is openly saying, I want to come back and fight. And he's like, oh, I don't think he wants to fight.
Well, let's just transition right into it, because I did want to talk to George about George St. Pierre with you. Obviously, the Canadian fighter, the Canadian journalist, got to talk about it.
Yeah.
What's your take? I mean, I think people are excited about it. People are talking about having George back in the game. George re-entered the USADA testing pool, which, you know, we had talked about Cole Coffey a couple weeks ago. We knew he would do that.
And to no coincidence, the day he entered it was legitimately
4 months to the day.
4 months to the day of that Toronto show that they announced on December 10th. He announced it on, what was it, August 10th.
Right.
He was going to be back in. That's no coincidence.
So, what's your feel? Because my thing is that I've always felt like George is considering it, and still at this point I feel like he's considering it. I feel like it's a realistic consideration. I don't feel like it's necessary a commitment, like it's done. I feel like he has contractual demands, and I feel like he wants to make sure those things are met. And I feel like he wants to go through all the things right. And this is not necessarily inside information. It's more just educated speculation, I guess. I feel like he does want to come back. But it's not one of those things where – here's the thing. You know, you said he says he wants to fight again.
Yeah,
I think he wants to fight again, but I think he wants
to fight again.
Exactly. He wants to fight again on his terms. He's not going to just take – you almost just grabbed my beverage there, young Mike Bond. Young Mike Bond's life would end very quickly.
Hey, people, I realize, like, I put, like, two fingers on it, and I realized.
Whoa. No, but I feel like he wants to fight again, but I don't feel like he's going to fight again unless he gets the exact terms that he wants.
Yeah, which is fair, and maybe he played it wrong by coming out in interviews and saying, I want to come back, like, I'm ready, this is the time. And, you know, publicly admitting that he's ready to do this. Maybe he should have done everything behind closed doors. But I'm one of the people that from day one, after he walked away, I was like, I'm good. You know, he's
right.
Most wins in UFC history.
Walked out the right time.
Offenses. Like, you don't see this happen at all. And we might have a chance with, like, Dan Henderson, who could win the title and walk away. But even still, like, his record, he's been lost a bunch of his recent fights. George St. Pierre was one of the most dominant, longest winning streaks, all this kind of stuff. And he just, you know, said, this is too much for me, I'm out. And he left on the top peak of the game. And I was like, I don't think he's coming back. I legitimately didn't think he was going to, even though Faraz Ahabi, his coach, was always saying, I'd like to see George fight again, all this kind of stuff. I still think he has the passion. And then he came out and said, I'm ready, like, let's do this. And it's just a big standstill right now. You talk to anyone who's you know, whether it's the UFC or his team, they both want this to happen, but it's just they are very far away on terms. And I think a lot of it comes down to it'll be November coming up. November 13th, I believe, is the date of his last fight against Johnny Hendricks. That'll be 3 years since he last fought. The UFC is a completely different organization. Not even to bring up new owners. And I think GSP might have been one of those guys that was, you know, one of those Lorenzo dudes that, like, Dana would kind of get into some stuff and, you know, shit would get smoothed over by Lorenzo. Like, the good cop, bad cop kind of thing.
If GSP is saying, I want to fight, and Dana's saying, I don't think he wants to fight, that's contractual.
Not even to mention
point
that.
Blank.
Yeah, but all these things factor in. You know, it's a new company. There's new owners. USADA didn't exist, which I think USADA is the lowest sticking point because GSP has wanted this.
Absolutely,
all
he's
along.
About it.
Like, that's one of the things that I think has brought him back. Even I don't think if they didn't do a USADA deal, they wouldn't have even – he probably wouldn't have considered it. Because he still has been one of the most outspoken fighters ever. He said, you know, they want him, probably wanted him for New York, which would make all the sense in the world. That's his second home. He trains at Henzo Gracie's, all that kind of stuff. And but he said, I don't want to get the 4-month thing. Like,
yeah, he doesn't
Lesnar
want the waiver. He doesn't want the Brock Lesnar rule.
Yeah, because he talked all along about being one of the cleanest fighters, wanting the perfect thing. He's like, I'm not going to, you know, go back on my word by getting some sort of exemption. So I think that's like on the bottom of the barrel, but the top of the barrel is the Reebok deal. Because he was sponsored.
He's an Under Armour guy.
Under Armour, Affliction.
Gets paid very well.
Affliction as well. Like, we've seen, and I'd be curious if this does work out, and this is just complete speculation, guesses. I think if he does come back, there's going to be some middle ground there. I think maybe he comes back, and as we've seen him in the past, maybe just plain black shorts, maybe no Reebok logo, no Under.
No way.
You don't think so?
Reebok's playing for exclusivity. That's what they're paying for.
Yeah, but maybe it has.
No
like,
way.
Yeah, so that's what's all interesting to me. Like maybe like some sort of stripped down version of it. Maybe there's one Reebok logo on like the butt tag, something like that. I really don't know. Like.
That's a slippery slope, bro.
Sure, it is.
You're paying for exclusivity.
But we've already
you let
seen
that go.
A slippery slope. We saw, like, no, you know, basic black, white kits, black champions kits. Then we saw Conor McGregor walk into that UFC 194 fight wearing, you know, his.
But that only benefited Reebok because that allowed them to have more options. That allowed them to sell a different set of merchandise.
So, yeah, I mean, I really don't know. I think there's going to be some sort of compromise there.
Yeah.
I don't think it's
no good. I agree with you, there's some kind of compromise. I'm just wondering what it is.
I just think because, you know, that card is less than 4 months away at this point. That means they have that much time to figure out some sort of thing there, and I hope that they will, because I think what Canada needs more than anything right now is a George St. Pierre fight. That would be a huge for the market, especially in Toronto. Going back there, they haven't been there in 3 years, and when they were there, they got 3 John Jones headline pay-per-views in a row, which is nothing to complain about. Like, he's, you know, arguably, and the last one was him versus Gustafson, which is one of the greatest
amazing
fights ever. So, but I just think that would be huge for them to have him back in the market. His return, a huge fight. Yeah,
they could sell out
massive.
Any venue in the country.
They need to do that, and if that doesn't work out, what's their backup plan? That's what scares me, and I think they'll find some middle ground. And bigger question is, who the hell is he going to fight? That's
crazy.
Like, that's going into another level of the discussion. Is it going to be Tyron Woodley? Is it going to be, you know, Anderson Silva, the fight we wanted to see forever? It doesn't matter in the big picture. It'll do big business regardless. But yeah, I just think George at this point. Especially him seeing, you know, what Conor McGregor is making, what Ronda Rousey is making, all these kind of people. He is on that level. He is, you know, one of those. He's perhaps the, I don't know, like, you'd have to look it up. Maybe gross in total pay-per-views. Maybe the biggest selling pay-per-view draw, like,
one
in total in UFC history. If at worst, top 2 or 3. So, like, he knows what he's worth, and he's not going to compromise his brand, his, you know, personal self-esteem, all that stuff to just, like, come back and fight just because he has some sort of like internal urge to do it. He's not going to compromise all
the
that.
Great news is that our man Cole Coffey was actually able to get a hold of George St. Pierre very quickly and just ask him about his specific demands and what he wanted to come back.
Nope.
Were you looking for a GSP impression?
Yeah, dude, yeah. Wait, did you? Oh, were you able to actually get the George St. Pierre audio?
No.
Did you? Because I heard we had some GSP audio.
I got some BJ Penn reaction.
Oh, you got BJ Penn's reaction? Well, fantastic. You know, I had heard that we got some BJ Penn reaction. What exactly did BJ Penn have to say?
He said, George,
come back for the trilogy, George. I already beat you once. The judges went the other way. Hawaii, Hilo, just scrap. BJPenn.com.
Definitely got better towards the end. I don't mind it at all. I liked it.
Did you hear that? And I thought this was interesting that Mike Bond said that he thinks George St. Pierre may have been the biggest pay-per-view seller of all time. Fortunately, Cold Coffee was able to check in with Conor McGregor about his thoughts on the fact that George St. Pierre may be one of the greatest of all time. And Cold Coffee, I'm hoping you can share that audio with us now.
Nope.
You got it?
It got deleted.
I am not impressed by your performance.
The technical difficulties this week are very frustrating. Listen, I did want to ask one question. At Flying Brian J on Twitter hit me up, and I thought this was a pretty good question, actually.
Okay, it was sweet.
He said, why is drinking a frosty beverage at the presser fine, but hitting a vape pen triggers a USADA investigation? And I thought that was actually a great question.
Alcohol isn't banned.
Well, the problem is, I think the thing is, Mike Bond doesn't tweet when somebody's drinking a frosty beverage.
Or I just wants to have that Don Cerrone fight.
It is kind of an interesting question, though. It's funny. At first, I was just like, oh, okay, whatever. But it is kind of a funny question.
Alcohol
because
it's not banned in competition.
It is.
By USADA?
Yes. It's actually banned in competition. You can be tested for alcohol. But nobody's going to – but if somebody's drinking a beer post-fight, nobody's going to go test them.
Yeah.
But – the whole thing with Nate Diaz, whether or not – let's be honest. The rule – first of all, I've said this a million times, and I'll say it again. Testing for weed is stupid, period. I think it's stupid, period. But you can't argue about it after the fact. You have to argue – you don't need to argue after you've been tested. You need to argue before you've been tested. Like, when you're not even in training camp. Like, right now, Nate and Nick Diaz and anybody else who thinks weed should be legal – needs to be hammering USADA right now, hammering WADA, hammering Nevada, hammering BOFA. Just do all of them. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to be doing it now. You can't do it after the fact that you've been tested. But I think that is actually a pretty damn interesting question. You know, like, people made such a big deal out of him hitting a vape pen, but nobody makes a big deal about anybody having a frosty beverage at the press conference, which technically, now granted, USADA hasn't been around the whole time, but technically those are both in competition. The 6-hour rule and all that.
But you're just talking like at the press conference. If we're talking overall in competition, like that's 6 hours after the fight ends. Mm-hmm. So that technically means, you know, if we're in a place.
The after party.
The after party is what USADA is going to start rolling in. Like, you know, alcohol, I think if, you know, in some sense, if they came and they inspect you pre-fight, even if the Nevada commissioners, they come talk to you, like, if you're drunk. Maybe you just have, like, one beer to take the buzz off. I don't know. Maybe you guys do that. I feel like that would be, like, a detriment to your fighting ability.
Right. Because
it'd maybe throw you off your game. So I don't know who would be doing that in the first place. But, yeah, I mean, it's a very weird thing. Of course, just weed has this silly stigma still for whatever reason. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think USADA has at least made, you know, steps forward by they're not testing anyone out of competition.
Right.
We've seen Nick Diaz, the now infamous Snapchat story where he was in Vegas and waiting for like a USADA person to come test him, and he's sitting there just waiting forever, and he's like,
"You can smoke weed and you get here with me."
I think he didn't realize that weed wasn't legal out of competition.
Right.
If you like actually think about it in the big picture, but he's like showing on his thing. He's like, "Yeah, I got some weed here." He's like showing it on camera. Come smoke a joint with me, USADA. Like all this kind of shit. And yeah, I just think it. The stigma is stupid. Shouldn't be tested out of competition. In competition, I can understand. You know, maybe shorten the window, but like, of course, after that, I hope Nate Diaz, because even still, he wasn't smoking like pure weed. He wasn't smoking like weed oil.
Definitely got paid, right? That company definitely paid him.
Yes, and it was probably the smartest thing ever. Because
it was brilliant.
Dude, the little clip we posted on our Instagram of that was the highest viewed clip we've ever had. Like over a 250,000 views on that clip. Like far and away. And you look at like rivaling social medias. Their numbers are the exact same. You go on Facebook, all these things.
We don't have rivals.
Like there's, you know, there was other websites like Rolling Stone wrote stories. Every major outlet wrote a story about Nate Diaz smoking this CBD pen at the post-fight press conference. And everyone, know, everyone's an expert when it comes to this shit. Everyone seems to know that, you know, it's legal, it's not legal, it's, you know, cannabis, it's not, it's extracted from this, it includes this, it, you know, everyone
seems... It's over my head, I'm not going to lie.
No, it is, it's over mine too, but it seems like, generally...
But I'd like to learn more.
But, you know, it seems like it comes from cannabinoids, which is still, like, I think there's like 60 active ingredients in THC, and one of those is that, and if you test for that, like, I don't know... Nate Diaz could be smoking that all night. I don't know how much you'd have to smoke to like get to a certain threshold where it would maybe show up in a test. But it's weird because it came out, you saw it as investigating this. We've seen already like the admission of use. Crow Cop comes to example. George Sullivan, like it, that's all it takes for them to give you a suspension. So even if Nate's tests come back clean, they saw him doing that, they could say there's active ingredients of THC. Like, I would hope this is not what USADA, Nevada Commission, any of these things are spending their time, money, focus on.
If that happens, everybody in this sport needs to stand up and revolt. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, I am a huge proponent of this drug program. I am so happy that the UFC is doing what they're doing and that USADA is doing what they're doing, as vigilant as they're doing it. I'm impressed. But I will say, if that is how this thing goes down, I think everybody needs to stand up and revolt.
And I would, and I absolutely would, because it would disgust me if Nate Diaz got screwed over, especially, you know.
And it's not even about Nate Diaz, you know what I mean? It's just the fact that, like,
no, it's,
dude,
yeah,
come
it's
on.
The entire topic, and the thing is, I would hope if he does get in any trouble, like, if, talking worst-case scenario, it's via USADA and not the Nevada Commission, because we've seen what these people do. They try to... You know, they'll suspend you longer, and but it's Nate has had never had any trouble. He has never been suspended. He's never had a failed drug test.
Well, yeah, that would be a problem if they try to burn him.
But still, what's
if they
worst?
Try to burn him because of his brother?
Sure,
that's
and,
not fair.
And that's what
that's not
me,
fair.
But at worst, under their bylaws, he's a first-time offender. The reason that they threw the book at Nick so hard, it was this third offense.
Right.
So they have like,
and I've always
crazy
said
crazy jurisdiction.
I've always said Nevada had a right to throw the book at Nick.
Sure.
I mean, I know
did.
That five
I mean,
five years is insane.
Yeah.
But like, dude, three times.
Do something.
Three
yeah.
times.
5 years and like the fine too. But still, like they. I think under their bylaws, they have the right to fine up to like 20% of the purse or something. Mm-hmm. And
for a $2 million purse,
that's and as we've heard time and time again from certain people, that's not all he made, which is nice, which is one of the reasons.
It's another.
Why
it's an,
this shit
it's another
happens.
Interesting talk about, you know, disclosed pays versus non-disclosed. Like, I think it's cool that like it's disclosed that they made $3 million and $2 million, but we know they really made more like. 12
and
10 or
yeah.
what, you know what I mean? Like, we know that it's in the millions. But what's funny is, like...
They can't take that money.
They can't take that money.
They can't take
that
money. That
3 and 2, they can take some of that money.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
And you know, maybe that comes into part when Nate's sitting up there being like, I'm not taking another fight till it's Conor McGregor. That could be Nate Diaz sat out for a year plus when he was making 20 and 20
right.
on the books. He will gladly do it now that he's
Hell
made
yeah.
all this money, especially with all the damage he took in that fight.
I think
too.
Nate
he's
should
injured.
Sit out. I think Nate should sit out for 12 months, 18 months, and
sure.
just wait
I
for
I mean,
the
if they want to completely turn the book from everything Dana's saying, whatever, and book this rematch for December or something, okay, but I don't think that will be
no,
the case.
No. I think Nate should sit out and wait for Conor to fight for another fight, maybe even two fights.
Which would be good for him too, right?
I think it'd be
great. We're getting a little off trail here, but still, the thing about Conor McGregor is he's reached...
You're getting off trail. I'm focused always.
He's reached this point where Conor McGregor, I could maybe argue, from the time now till whenever he leaves the UFC, he'll never fight another three-round fight again. They're all going to be main
True.
Events. They're all going to be five-round fights, and that stuff takes a toll real
it's
quick.
It's actually called a tree-round fight.
A tree, yes. Yeah, can we get the cold coffee impression now? Are we okay?
Tree.
All right, listen, let's talk about Demian Maia real quick. Demian Maia stepped in today, talked to us briefly. I thought Demian, first of all, one of the nicest guys. If you don't know much about Demian Maia, if you're a hater
Legit.
Because you don't like his style or whatever, like, dude is literally one of the nicest guys ever. He's actually a trained journalist as well. So which
makes me love him even more.
Of course,
like,
we love him even more. But he is fantastic, and... I think he's really just so self-aware and so aware of everything in the sport right now. And I honestly, he gave, which might seem bizarre to some people, his scrum was the longest of the day.
No, it was the best.
I thought it was the best of the day.
He knows how to speak, even though English isn't his first language.
Right.
He gives us some good stuff. Like, he's just a fascinating guy to talk to. Anytime I get on the phone with Damian Maya, it's like 20 minutes at least having a conversation, because he knows a lot about everything. I mean, he's just a fascinating dude, and he's been in the sport for so long. Like, I remember going to – when I drove down to Portland back when I was like 17, 18 years old, my mom actually drove a friend and I down there, and that was UFC 102, and that's when he got blasted by Nate Marquardt in like 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ridiculous, like, mid-spinning – KO.
It was less than 30. It was like, in my head, I want to say like 17 or something.
It was real fast knockout. But even still, like, I remember, you know, back then, I never even thought in my head that I would be like an MMA journalist, that we'd be sitting here today. I was just a fanboy, you know, a 17-year-old kid. And I was, you know, walking around the hotel, and I saw, we went to the pool, me and my buddy, and it was just Damian and his boys chilling there. And like, he was so nice to us. And just ever since then, just being a big, you know, I don't want to say a fan, but just like thought he's a very cool guy. Like everything you said there, just one of the nicest people in the sport, a genuine guy. No one you would ever hear like a bad behind the scenes story about. He's treated everyone with respect. Just everything. The story that he told us about Rory McDonald when I asked him about Rory, you know, amazing, going to Bellator, and he was like, yeah, Rory's one of the guys that, you know, even though he beat me, he came behind the scenes and like, you know, thanked me for just being such a warrior and such
that
a great martial artist. And I'm sure a fair bit of that goes on behind the scenes. You know, we like to talk about the anger, the hype, you know, these rivalries. But I think a lot of these guys have respect for each other. And Damian and Rory McDonald seem like two very much of those guys. Like, Damian's just, yeah, it was one of the better scrums. And he's an interesting point. I mean, he's 38 years old. I know he didn't like to admit it, which I also respected him before, which he did admit. He's on this title run right now. He's won 5 in a row. If he wins this, he should be very close, which he's just – it's unfortunate. He's like almost like the Tony Ferguson of the division. Obviously not as like exciting as crazy, but it seems like he's going to be half – stop that. He's going to be like one of those dudes that's going to have to win like 8 in a row to get a title shot,
right.
It feels like. And even talking to him, though, he's like, if I lose one of these fights, and you feel like if he does suffer another loss in the next – even if it's not this fight, if it's the next fight – it's not going to happen for him because he's 38. He'll be 39 soon. And it's just tough to rebound from that. He admitted that if I lose this fight, if I lose the next fight, I am content with my UFC career. If he wins this fight, he'll be tied with Donald Cerrone and Matt Hughes for the third most wins in UFC history behind GSP and Michael Bisping. Like, he is one of the most successful fighters the UFC has ever had. And like you said, he's being here, he put jiu-jitsu on the map, like, as at the high level. He's got a lot, you know, he'll tie Nate Diaz with second most submission wins behind Hoist Gracie if he gets a submission. Like, he is, you look at the record books, he's in the top 10 for most takedowns. Like, Damian Maya is all over the place when you look at, like, UFC history books, and that's a very good career, title or not. It'd be nice to see him at least get that other chance. It sucks his one opportunity at the belt came under like ridiculous circumstances when Vitor Belfort got hurt at UFC 112, I think it was, and he like got subbed in on short notice, and he just had that awful fight with Anderson Silva, which was as much Anderson's fault as it was his. Like, no one was doing anything, but he's rebounded from that very strong, and it's amazing. If he gets this win, it would just be, it'd be crazy to see him keep going 6 in a row. And you know, it's unfortunate because GSP is right there. He could jump in front of him. I think we can eliminate Nick Diaz. I don't think he should get the shot under whatever circumstances. It should be George St. Pierre. I'm fine with him jumping anyone in line. There could be a guy who's won 20 in a row against like the number one dude over and over and over. But it's George St. Pierre. He was the champion. He didn't get, you know, didn't get in a hit and run and get the belt stripped with him. Like, there was nothing there. He just walked away because he wasn't there. George St. Pierre can cut anyone, but excluding him from the conversation, Damian Maya like is right there. It's him and Stephen Thompson. It would just suck that he like doesn't have a direct line to the belt still.
It's a big fight for him. There's no doubt about it. And we'll talk about it. We'll wrap up with our little thoughts on this fight, because I was kind of intrigued to hear how people are thinking about this. In the meantime, my frosty beverage is just about empty here. So while I refill this bad boy, let's hear from Damian Maya, who basically just spoke to me and the young Mike Bond. And
the guy didn't even ask him what he thought of the Olympics.
So after your last win, you thought you were the number one contender. So when they said, no, we want you to fight Carlos Condit, what was your reaction? Did you resist that a little bit?
I was kind of sad, of course, because I want to fight for the title. But at the same time, I think this would be the best fight. You know, this. I thought in that time this will be the best fight that I can have besides the title shot. So, you know, I just accept and... You know, it is what it is.
We've seen guys like Tyron Woodley. He set out for a year. He's like, I'm not fighting again until I fight for the title. Did you think about taking that approach, or why not?
I think it's too risky. You know, it's too risky. And I like to keep my rhythm, you know, to keep fighting. And I think that's important for an athlete, especially MMA, that we don't fight every month. So I want to keep up, but... You know, it's too risky what Tyron did. You know, he did well, but he couldn't go well. So I didn't want to take this approach. Maybe after this fight.
Is it hard? Because it's still not even clear. Because Tyron's saying he wants to fight, you know, George St. Pierre, Nick Diaz, and then obviously Stephen Thompson has a very good case as well.
Yes.
Is it frustrating that, you know, you might win this fight? The path isn't very clear. It's not, you know, you're 100% the number one contender.
I can be frustrated about that, especially now, because, you know, I have a fighting coming up in a couple of days. But I think, you know, will be either me or Thompson or me. So I hope, you know, will be me. But if not, I hope, you know, they at least do very fast this fight with Thompson, and then, because they both are just waiting, and then I can fight after that. So. But first of all, I need to win this Saturday, and it's not an easy test. It's probably one of the hardest tests in the welterweight division for me.
Talk about this moving from 3 rounds to 5 rounds. A lot of people think that favors Carlos because mm-hmm. he's fought a lot of 5-round fights.
Yes.
Was that a concern for you? I know people have questioned your cardio.
Yeah, of course it's always a concern because he's a guy who fights well long distance. But the difference is, like, you know, if you fight a 5-round fight standing up is different than you fight 5 rounds grappling, you know? And the energy, you spend much more energy when you grapple. So when I fought Anderson, for example, I was fighting 5 rounds stand up and with no problems, no issues with my cardio. But the problem is, like, the style that I put in the fight, we're going to be tired. You know, I'm going to be tired. He will be tired too. So, you know, I know that. It's different than his fight against Lawler that was just stand up all the time. So sometimes people don't realize that. But of course, you know, I respect his cardio very much. And I know even in the grappling game, he has a big cardio, and he knows how to save energy also. And he keep going all the time. And plus, I think the most important is not just about the cardio. His mind is like... He never gives up, you know, and that's the hard thing. It's not the cardio, it's his mind. So I need to be ready for that mind that I'm sure if I don't submit him or he doesn't finish me before the 5 rounds, he will push all the time to the last second.
You talked a lot about potentially retiring after he lost to Robbie Lawler. Does that make you maybe question him? Like, sometimes, you know, if you have one foot out the door, maybe your heart's not completely in it, your head's not in it. Do you think that's an advantage of yours? Because you seem to be very locked in and focused in your career right now.
Yeah, I don't think so. They asked me that before, but I think that can be or cannot be a good thing for me. Because sometimes when the guy's like, okay, I'm going to retire, he just relax and he maybe become more dangerous than he was. I don't know what happens in his mind, you know, I don't know his mindset right now. I hope you're right.
And you're 17-2 in the UFC in fights and you land a takedown. I think in his 5 UFC losses, he's been taken down about 30 times total. How key is, you know, actually getting this fight to the ground? Is that what you need to do in order to win?
I think it's not just get the fight to the ground, but also work well on the ground, because he defends well, he has a good guard. Even if he, you know, people have, they taking him down, you know, they are not able to submit him because he defends well, he's an aggressive guard, he's stand up well, you know, when he's on bottom, and he just keep going all the time. So it's how I'm going to work my jiu-jitsu that I think will make the difference in this fight.
Yeah, and he hasn't been submitted since, I think, 2006. Is that what you're looking to do, you know, put an exclamation mark on? Do you feel like you need to get a stoppage in order to make that statement for the title shot?
No, I, you know, when I get there Saturday night, my focus, all my focus will be win. And all my focus will be do the game plan that we train during the camp. So the submission is a consequence. Of course, that would be perfect, but my main focus is go there, put my game plan, and win this fight. Because if I don't win, I know I'm not going to have the chance after that, you know. And if I win, then, you know.
Does that put more pressure on you because you are 38? Do you feel like, you know, this is your last chance to make a run at the title?
No, I don't think about that. I used to think about that when I was 33, 34. It's, you know, you realize that it's just something in your mind that doesn't matter, you know, and I don't know, I'm doing my best every day in my training, I'm feeling well every day, so it God wants, you know, and if you know, I'm able to do, I will get the title, I will be a champion. If not, you know, I'm very happy with everything that I accomplished in my life, I'm very grateful for everything I did and for put jiu-jitsu in a such higher level in the UFC. You know, I'm very thankful for that, but of course, you know, as a sportsman, I have this dream, but this pressure just gonna put me off the track, so I really don't think about this pressure right now.
Carlos has said that the jiu-jitsu game is the most dangerous in the division. At the same time, he said that your style is not a fan favorite.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to stand with him at all?
Do
you want to stand with him?
No, I don't care about that, you know, I don't care, I think, you know, there's people who like jiu-jitsu, people who like striking, and you cannot please everybody, you know, and my style is the style to win the fight, and hopefully submit, you know, when I can, and that's it, you know, I work hard, like I said, every day, and I go there, I try to do my best, and, you know, I've been doing that all my life since I was a kid, and I don't care, I just go there to fight.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Demian Maia. I'm excited for this fight. Listen, Cole Coffey's been a little quiet over there. I think I don't know if the guy's feelings hurt earlier. He's having a couple of frosty coconuts over there. He's been a little quiet. Fortunately, he was able to collect some audio from Frenchman Thibaut Goudy about his fight.
We very excited.
I was also excited that Italian Alessio Di Chirico was able to speak briefly with Cole Coffey and really gave us some insight on what he expects out of this weekend.
See, good fight.
South African Gareth McClellan, of course, will be on the opposite side of the cage. Also briefly spoke with Cole Coffey about what he expects out of this matchup.
I was trying to not say something too stereotyped. No, I'm not going to do anything bad.
How about Peruvian Enrique Barzola, who
what
also...
What the fuck do they speak in Peruvian? They speak Peruvian? Is it Spanish?
Yes.
Do they speak Spanish?
Yeah, it's Spanish.
Si.
Per Google.
All right. Well, listen. Other than the fantastic audio that Cold Coffee's been able to collect this week, it's been an epic moment. All right, let's talk about this main event, guys. Cold Coffee. Carlos Condit, Demian Maia. Man. Okay, I'm on record. You know, our staff picks will come out later this morning, Friday morning. I'm on record picking Demian Maia. And I got to be honest. I mean, when I first started thinking about this matchup is when it was first announced, and it was a 3-round fight. And I started playing it in my head, and I'm
Maia,
like...
Maia, big time, man.
I'm like, dude, Maia is going to win 2 rounds of this fight. There's no way Maia doesn't win 2 rounds of this fight. Yeah. Then it gets moved to a 5-round fight, yeah. And I'm still sticking with it. I'm still sticking with what's, according to the odds makers, I believe, the upset. Cold Coffee, what do you think about this fight? Because it's interesting, man. I mean, Condit's a beast, dude. Carlos Condit is a damn beast. And this fight means so much. But, I mean, he has teased retirement. He has kind of had one foot out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Seems focused. Our buddy Ricky Lindell, we ended up having funny on the seats over here. We ended up on the flight here. We ended up having seats right next to him just sheerly by coincidence and ended up just talking about the fight the whole time. And at that point, man, he had pretty much sold me that I completely screwed up my pick and needed to change it. I don't know, man. This is – it's such a clash of styles. It's such a clash of it's interesting.
It is. It is. And you're right. It's tough to not watch, especially what Carlos did at the open workout, and not feel how confident and just how comfortable he looked out there. And with a coach like Ricky Lindell, like, he amazes me every time that we talk to him. I mean, the guy is probably one of the smartest people I've ever heard when it comes to breaking stuff down. He's right there with, you know, like Greg Jackson's one of the guys I put at the top echelon when it comes to breaking down fights and breaking down opponents and all the other sort of stuff. And Ricky is right there when it comes to the technique and the other stuff. And he's such a nice guy that I hate to think about how I have to maybe say that I don't think his guy is going to win. Because what was interesting, you know, Maya, after the last couple of times I've seen him fight, he's gone back to what works for him. And so I assumed it was only going to be jiu-jitsu, but I thought his hands looked good today. I thought his striking hit in the mitts, and I'm thinking, you know, everybody's thinking he's this one-trick pony. He's only going back to his jiu-jitsu, and I think that's what's going to be the downfall of some people, because I think they're only going to be expecting one thing, and I think he's going to shock some people with his hands. I thought his hands looked really good today, and what's nice is that even without even having to try to fake or try to even get it to the ground, guys are already got that in their minds, and there's the possibility there they're going to forget that he has decent striking as well. And I think that's the kind of thing that, you know, as much as Carlos wants it to keep on the feet, Carlos wants to keep that distance. I think he wants to work those kicks. He wants to kind of pick the pace, but we see Damian takes that away from guys. What he did to Matt Brown broke my heart, but it was the biggest thing where I was just like, here's a guy that normally can control the pace and can do all that sort of stuff, and it just completely – it was like it wasn't even an option to go to.
Stat bomb, Damian Maia has been hit with 12 total significant strikes in three.
It's insane. Insane because what you're saying is interesting, Cole Coffey, because, I mean, Damian obviously doesn't want to get into a boxing match or a kickboxing match with Carlos Condit, but, you know, he can also shock him a little bit because Carlos is going to be so worried about the takedown, so worried about the positioning in the clinch, so worried about, you know, going to the ground – that you can get a little bit sneaky with your strike.
Yeah.
You can get a little bit of stuff in there that's, you know, if somebody was looking for it, they would be able to avoid it. But, I don't necessarily think this is going to be the prettiest fight. I mean, I think when Carlos Condit is coming in to a fight, you're looking for something exciting. You're looking for something fast-paced.
He says
it's going to be like a beautiful knockout. He was saying from talking today, I feel like he was saying, you know, we're going to find out in the first – few minutes how this fight's gonna go. Like I feel like he's expecting or predicting some sort of early stoppage. I don't know if he sees something in Damian's game that he thinks he can capitalize on very quickly, but if you listen to that scrum, which, you know, we all heard earlier on the podcast, it seems like it's like one of those things, like he knows something that we don't.
Well, listen,
which is interesting to me.
I was gonna say, Mike, I mean, listen, you know, when we were doing our staff predictions, we were shooting everything, going into this. Again, as I said, I was thinking Demi Maia. Then the fact that it went five rounds, I thought I should probably change. But I was like, no, you know what? I'm going to stick with my initial gut. I was standing there as Cole Coffey filmed your media prediction as well. You also went with Demi Maia as well, which I was a little surprised. I thought I might have been that one guy on the island who was so crazy that he was sticking with Maia. Why did you decide to stick with Maia, knowing that the five-round fight definitely favors Carlos Condit?
That definitely worries me. I mean, Carlos Condit, you cannot deny. He's one of the best five-round fighters ever in, like, MMA. He kills it. Even if you go back to some of his, like, WEC fights, I can't remember the exact names, but, like, some of the dudes he fought seemed sketchy for him in, like, early rounds, and he just came on, and he was absolute fire, and he had, you know, win a late stoppage. For the most part, actually, he would always win a late stoppage because he didn't even win a decision until he got to the UFC. His first ever decision win was Nick Diaz in that fight where he was accused of running or whatever. Carlos Condit's an absolute killer. But and you go back, he hasn't been submitted since 2006, and it's like, I'm saying all these things, like,
I know, right?
Okay, I'm picking him, but Damian Maia, I don't know, he just looks so good right now, and I think Cold Coffee made a very good analysis of it earlier. Damian Maia had that weird stage where you see fighters, they come in, they're so good at something, and it works so well for them, and then, like, I don't know how else to define it, and it's like a way they become overtrained.
Mm-hmm.
In, like, a certain aspect. And they think, you know, oh, I want to come in. Damian Maia has been in the UFC for, like, however many fights. He just got his first ever knockdown. Like, knockdown, not even a knockout. I don't think he's ever had a finish by strikes. Knockdown against Alexander Yakovlev or whatever, like, two or three fights ago. That was the first time he had ever knocked anyone down. Like, he can hang on the feet. Like, he fought Chris Weidman to a decision, even though Chris Weidman took that fight on, like, 3 days' notice and cut an insane weight. Like, he is capable on his feet, and he's gained the boxing skill over the year, but it seemed like for a long stage, like, almost like a 10-fight stage there, he all of a sudden thought that he can, like, outbox these dudes.
To me, it's Sean Sherk. Sean Sherk was just grinding people in the ground, and then one day he decided he wanted to be a boxer. It's like, wait.
And you see it, dude, very often.
It's awesome. I know you want to show that you're well-rounded.
Like
you want to show that you're a great fighter. But, like, listen, man, when you are so high class at one thing, when you're that dude that's, like, EA Sports rated 100 or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Do that. Yeah. Don't shy away from that. Do that. Don't be afraid. I know you want to show us different things and you got to put on a show and all this, but, like, do that.
And then it just seemed at some point, I think it was the Neil Magny fight, where Damian Maia decided to just, like, cut the shit. And was like, okay, I'm so much better than these guys on the ground. Just take them down. Like, and it makes you, the fact that you're standing, of course, that adds more threats. Cold Coffee said, like, maybe Carlos Condit will be so worried about the takedown that it kind of just throws him off his game. I feel like that could be a factor, too. But the thing that just stands out to me is, let me go back to what we said earlier. I was not in any way trying to disrespect Carlos Condit. Like, the facts are the facts. Like, this guy has been taken down in 15 of his 17 UFC or WBC fights. He's won more of them than he's lost, but he still gets taken down. Like, I just think of it's just, I could see it being a close five-round fight. You know, you think of, like, the Johnny Hendricks fight where, like, oh, he won it from his back. He got up from every takedown. Like, he landed better strikes, all these kind of things. But especially the judges still weigh takedowns very heavily in this game, even if you get back up very quickly, like the action of being taken down. Damian Maia is one of the best takedown artists ever in the UFC, and especially coming from like a jiu-jitsu background. It's unreal how good he is at taking people to the ground. That's his X factor. You know, you see Nate Diaz. He's tied with Nate Diaz for, I think, the third most submission wins in UFC history. You compare them. Damian's got a lot of them from being on top, establishing control, rear naked chokes. Nate Diaz is like, he hits dudes and they shoot for sloppy takedowns. Of course, the Conor McGregor example is like the biggest one that stands out to people. But Nate Diaz isn't taking people down, like, you know, and getting on top. Kurt Pellegrino, you know, triangle choke. Most of his wins are triangle chokes, guillotine choke, those kind of things. Damian's are like, get on top of you, weigh you down, tire you out, crawl on your back and rear naked choke you. Like, he is a dominant grappler. He's one of the few guys that does work on top, and I just feel, you know, Carlos hasn't been submitted in a long time, but he's been submitted, and Damian's just so dominant. But the thing that worries me is five rounds for sure. Like, I don't know, like, maybe we see Damian win the first three and then Carlos storms back in the last two, and it's like a 48-47 type of thing, a close fight. But I don't think it's going to be, unless Damian taps him, I think it's going to be probably a very close decision that goes five rounds. And maybe, I don't know if Carlos is going to KO him.
It matters a lot. I'll tell you what, man. It's a big fight. It matters a lot in the division. I mean, I think Wonderboy has to be the next title contender. As you said earlier, man, George St. Pierre steps in, he steps in. But he has to be, you know, Wonderboy has to be the next title contender if George St. Pierre isn't. If George St. Pierre does step in, then I guess maybe the winner of this fight would fight Wonderboy for the number one contender.
So the thing about Damian seems to think otherwise. He's like, I just hope Wonderboy fights, and then like, they gotta fight. And after, it's like, man, busy. Like that just analysis is so sketchy because one dude breaks their hand and they're out, you know, 8 months. And he even said it's too risky to sit out.
Cold Coffee, did you get that audio from Michael Bisping about what he thought about this fight?
It's shit. That was weird. I wasn't ready for that.
Hey, Michael Bisping. Did Michael Bisping fight Damian Maia? No. Did he?
No.
He was supposed to on that card, mm-hmm. and then he ended up fighting Chael Sonnen, yep. and then Chris Weidman stepped down a few days now. So
well, I do want to say too before we get away from the Carlos. Carlos looked good today when they're going down his transitions. He looked smooth. He looked like he was moving things around. So I mean, Carlos is no.
Yeah, it's Damian.
I mean,
Mike Bond has his own podcast. He wants to weigh in so bad right now.
I know, right?
No,
I mean, it's one of those things. But, true. But it's neat when you watch, when you do watch a guy at Damian's level, how he does it so effortlessly without even trying.
So
but
my God.
I also don't want to say that Carlos. It's not like Carlos doesn't have skills on the ground. He does. I just don't think he's going to try to use those skills. But, you know, when you got a guy like Ricky Lindell's like, he'll surprise you. Wait till you see it's going to be an exciting fight. You know, makes you want to think, of course, that the fight can go anywhere. But I don't think, and I think most people don't think Carlos is going to do that. But I just want to make sure we did say that Carlos did look good today when he was doing that. So if it does,
and
it could be interesting.
They were playing around. Him and Ricky were doing pro wrestling.
My goodness, I couldn't. He did
watch
not,
that. We got that on YouTube, right? We got that on YouTube.
Yeah, that's on YouTube.
If you want to watch it, like, I mean, he was having fun.
Yeah,
just
he
like,
was.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you, it's interesting because we talk about the guys who have actually beat Carlos. It's a more explosive wrestlers, Johnny Hendricks, Tyron Woodley, those kind of guys. Damian is crafty as all hell, but he's not one of those guys that can just like come at you and put Carlos on his back. And we talk about Carlos's foot movement, his, you know, all that kind of stuff, his striking, his ability to dictate the cage. Is Damian even going to be able to get hands on him? That's kind of the concern. Once he gets you, you're in serious trouble, but I don't know. Is he?
How does he get there?
Is he athletic enough? Like, he's not Johnny Hendricks. He's not Tyron Woodley. He's not one of these guys that can just, like, burst into a double leg. He needs to take you down. He needs to get, like, a body lock or something on you, get very deep on a double against the cage, something like that, and I don't know. Maybe that's the X factor. Carlos just keeps away, but
keeps the distance. If he does keep the distance, I mean, Carlos is hard to beat because, I mean, nobody dictates it better than he does. I mean, when he comes and he starts throwing those legs, I mean, who knows?
We'll see what happens.
Maybe it's one of those things, though. Like, him throwing kicks puts him in more trouble, though, and that's one of Carlos's best assets. Like, that just lures him into.
But he's definitely not one of those guys that just throws it out like, oh, here's my leg. Like, he delivers with some velocity and definitely picks and moves. And who knows? I mean, ultimately, my gut is definitely leaning towards Maya, but who knows? It could be that first round. He might pepper, you know, the legs, and next thing you know, Damien's moving slow and he's not going in there, and then he slows him down. Then,
well, I think what's most important is that myself and Cole Coffey just really want to thank Mike Bond again for letting us appear on the Mike Bond MMA talk show.
I didn't even think I was going to have to put headset on tonight. I was really trying to get out of this episode without saying a word. Then you dragged me in.
Well, listen, my man Cole Coffey has some editing to do. It's not that late. We're on the West Coast. It's not that late, but we do have early weigh-ins, which is kind of throwing a wrench in our plans. We might have to start making some adjustments in how we do this thing. We do have early weigh-ins. Fighters to be on the scale sooner than we would like to imagine.
We'll be
right
periscoping
now.
That.
We will be periscoping that. Maybe some Facebook Live, maybe some whatever. Who knows what's up? We'll do all that. But the Canadian Irish whiskey frosty beverages need to be refilled.
Jameson.
Is Jameson now made in Canada?
And we have some editing to do.
It's still the ice.
For myself, for Cold Coffee, I just want to say thank you for allowing us again, once again, on the Mike Bond MMA radio talk show. And thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.
He even got the last word right there. What's up? You can't hear him?
I'm just going to put up. Is that recording? Or did it change settings?
Let me hear you, Mike.
1, 2, 3.
Definitely change settings.
I can hear you guys.
Yeah?
Yeah, completely fine.
No, his.
Is it registering?
Mm-mm.
That's all right. It's just a. We could just pick it up from there, but.
Let me hear you. Yeah, you're not even coming across for some reason. Weird.
So maybe the power source change or something? Did it short me?
No, because it would short the mixer, not you.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah,
I can hear good. I can hear myself now.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it. I can hear myself.
All right, so we'll just do a pickup from there whenever you're ready.
Yeah, it's wrong.
Rolling? We rolling?
We rolling.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you get a little. little olives and cheese there.
I know your intro takes a little while.
Good enough. All right, cool. So we're rolling.